I'm embracing my brain. I'm embracing my brain. I'm embracing my brain. I'm embracing my brain. Hey, it's Nabila Stargazer, Grace. So I have just been noticing that I'm starting to embrace the way that my mind works more. I think I have a part of myself that has been wanting to change the way my brain works or the way my mind works. And I'm noticing that part is easing up and not attacking me so much. I don't know if it was so much attacking me as it was trying to get me to move faster. Like, kind of like you're riding a horse and you want the horse to do a certain thing, but it's not following your commands. That's kind of what this part of me was trying to do with my brain. Like, it would see how my mind was scatterbrained or disorganized, and it would want to organize it. I don't know if that's the best example, but that's what I have to come up with so far. So I'm just, I've been putting out writing and pictures on Instagram that just kind of, just to share what's going on with my brain, instead of trying to perform and act like a way that I think will be more acceptable to society. But I'm not saying I'm gonna be totally free willy. Like, I think there is a balance that can be achieved between editing yourself and curating your thoughts. And what I've been reading about in some Christian psychology literature is this idea of taking our thoughts captive. So that's like a way of meditating, I guess, is like taking your thoughts captive, like focusing on what am I thinking. And I don't know if you're asking it a question or just taking it to God. Or I haven't really practiced it too much, to be honest. But I think there should be a balance, is what I'm saying, between taking your thoughts captive and organizing them and allowing yourself to have freedom in your thinking so that you're not feeling attacked by your own brain, if that makes sense. I don't know if that'll make sense to any of you. It makes sense to me because it's where I'm at, but I'm still exploring. Okay, so I did quite a bit of research for this episode, and I went down a path a little bit of looking at acceptance and commitment therapy, which is also called ACT, which was developed by Hayes and Masuda. So I might get into some of the things that I learned about that therapy. It was seemed to be the most meaningful in terms of looking at the concept I was looking at, which was embracing my thoughts and emotions. But it was interesting what came up when I typed that into the search bar. There was a lot of articles about how to control your mind or thoughts, or how to have a clean mind, which the idea of controlling your mind is very unnerving to me. I had someone once tell me that I needed to control my mind better. And I think, I don't know, to me, being a someone in recovery, control issues are something that I've struggled with. And to me, control is not a good approach to solving problems. It's good to have self-control, and sometimes when you're running a business or organization, you want to control what you can control. And it does say in the Serenity Prayer, I accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So when you're taking the courage to change the things that you can, you're sort of enacting self-control there. So there is a form, one form of control that's good. But I prefer, when it comes to controlling thoughts and things like that, I prefer the idea of managing our thoughts or managing our negative emotions. But anyways, I'm gonna go through some of what I found that came up in my research, and then we'll see where it goes. But when I started looking at the articles, I was thinking about this part of me that I was talking about that wanted to improve all the aspects of myself. And I realized that this part of me has served me well. For example, it helped me get through a really bad depression a few years ago. My parents were really adamant about that I had control over my thoughts, and they were really adamant that I could change my thinking. And I started to see by the end of this year of really bad depression that I did have some power to change my thinking and beliefs, and this did give me a sense of empowerment to some extent. But at the same time, what this acceptance and commitment therapy is saying is that they have something called emotional control strategies, which are actually responsible for our problems. So, sometimes emotional control strategies can be like eating food or drinking alcohol, or doing things to try to control our emotions. And this could actually lead to more problems. So I do believe that there is power in analyzing our thoughts and choosing different thoughts or beliefs to some extent. What I learned is that bullying, it depends on the attitude we're having towards our negative thoughts. So if we're encouraging those thoughts or something, that's one thing. But if we're bullying our negative thoughts, that doesn't really work. Like if they gave an example of, say, you're hooked up to a polygraph test, which can test your how anxious you are and if you're telling a lie, and someone puts pressure on you and says, don't get anxious. Well, what are you going to do? You're probably going to get anxious unless you have a great amount of self-control. So, bullying our negative thoughts doesn't work. But our negative emotions can provide information. So, for example, anxiety can give you a sense of motivation to make your life better. I've been struggling a little bit with, well, I won't go into that right now, but and then they said that even positive emotions can have downsides, which was helpful for me to hear. Some of the downsides of positive emotions are unrealistic expectations and unnecessary risk. So I've noticed this interesting cycle with me where sometimes I'll go through like an upward spiral and then it'll be followed by a downward spiral. So I don't know if that's because my upward spiral is, in a sense, me becoming hypomanic, and then that leads to me spinning out of control a little bit and starting to like not like myself. I don't really know. I haven't really figured out if it is supposed to be figured out. I haven't really come to understand this pattern that I've noticed. But when I read this, it made me reminded me of that, because it says that negative emotions can provide information, and even positive emotions have downsides. So, like I said earlier, I like the idea of managing negative emotions versus controlling them. One thing I came across before I go into the ACT model more, one thing I came across was that this idea of the best possible self exercise, I thought might be an interesting exercise to do. It said that there was research on it that it increased optimism. So what you do is you, for 5 minutes a day for a couple weeks, you give yourself 5 minutes to think about what is your best possible self life look like. So you can visualize it or write it down or whatever. And I thought this might be interesting to do because it would give that part of you some space. So for me, there's that part of me that wants to control and wants to prod and poke and do whatever I can to improve all my other parts that are just struggling along already and don't need, maybe don't want that extra prodding all the time. But this would give me 5 minutes a day to allow that part to do that and to do it in a productive way that's going to increase my optimism by visualizing my best possible life self, or my best possible self. Couple other things I came across were different ways to frame your negative emotions or decision making. This article had like seven of them, but I just wrote down a few. So one of them, there was a frame where you think like a child. So if you think about it, children, when they're learning to walk, they don't stop and get discouraged after they keep falling. They continue to try to get up and keep going. So if you use that frame of reference, when you're struggling, if you just try to remember to keep going, that might help. There was also something they called the ecology framing. So when you're making decisions, you could think about, how does this affect all the different aspects of my life, like my social, mental, physical, financial, spiritual parts of myself? How would this decision affect all of those parts of my life? So that's ecology framing. Yeah, I don't need to go into the others, but so I'll get more into the ACT, Acceptance and Commitment Therapy article I read, which was, it was kind of, I forget the name of the article, but it was about accepting your demons or something. So it said that acceptance and commitment therapy is not aimed at symptom reduction, because when you label something, an internal private thought that's personal to you, as pathological, it naturally creates an adversarial relationship with yourself and can lead to worse symptoms and can even cause some diagnoses. So it's not aimed at symptom reduction. It focuses on the human language as being important with the struggle with our thoughts and feelings. I guess it assumes that people think in terms of language, which I think I do sometimes. I also think in terms of images sometimes. So the language part doesn't totally fit with me all the time because I'm a very visual person in my mind sometimes. But I definitely also think in words and thoughts. So experiential avoidance was something they talked about when we avoid our own experience. And then they said that emotional control strategies are responsible for our problems. So trying to control how you feel leads to increased suffering, which I thought felt like resonated a lot with my experience in 12-step programs. And then anger about anxiety. So you might have anger about your anxiety, anxiety about your anger, depression about your depression, or guilt about your guilt. So that's like when you're trying to struggle against your negative emotions, it makes it worse. Kind of like being in quicksand, they said. So you need to relax and allow the emotions. And then the whole point of acceptance and commitment therapy is aimed at developing psychological flexibility. So they have six different steps to develop greater psychological flexibility. So they have diffusion, which is when you observe your language and like become a little bit more detached, maybe play around, get curious about the language you're using in your thoughts and just see it as just language instead of reality. Acceptance, contact with the present moment, observing the self or the observing self, which when you're in the observing self perspective, no thought is dangerous, threatening, or controlling. So you can observe even scary thoughts and it's not gonna hurt you. And then after observing self is values and then committed action. So something else just came to my mind. Let me see if I can think of it. I've been struggling a little bit with some confusion. Like, it feels like spiritual confusion to me, but when I was reading about this acceptance and commitment therapy, it reminded me of my struggles with confusion because it is a lot about language in my mind and my perception of what is reality based on my studies in religion and different religious communities. So when I was thinking about, let's go back to this concept that our negative emotions can provide us with information. So it made me think, like, what kind of information is my confusion providing me with? And maybe all it is just showing me that we live in a confusing world. Reality is up for grabs, and based on who wants to shout louder, sometimes it seems like. But we live in a very fallen and confusing world. So naturally, I'm gonna feel confused sometimes because I like to try to understand reality. And I studied philosophy in undergraduate school, so I minored in philosophy while studying psychology as a major. So I like to think about things at a deep level and I don't know. I'm just trying to think, see what else I can come up with when I think about what else is my confusion trying to tell me. Yeah, let me know your thoughts. Hello. So, I've always loved mountains metaphors. I just recently did a painting of the mountains when I trekked in Nepal during my study abroad experience in undergrad. So the mountains there were desert. There were some snow-covered mountains, but we weren't hiking on those. We were hiking on the desert, more the desert, high altitude mountains, and they were very colorful in a way. Like it was desert, but like the way that the light hit them and the minerals and the sand and stone added a lot of color when you looked out over the mountains and the valleys. And I always liked, there was a quote, I don't know if it was by Nelson Mandela maybe, but it was something about how every time I climb another mountain, there's many more to go. So that was something I used to think about a lot, 'cause when you trek in those mountains, it's sometimes it gets frustrating because you climb up one mountain, you think you're getting to the top of the mountain, but you have like much further to go once you get to the top of that. So, yeah, and so when I was reading about acceptance and commitment therapy at the end of the article I read, there was this quote that I wanted to read about how the therapists interact with the clients, how they describe their relationship. So here it is. "I don't want you to think I've got my life completely in order. It's more as if you're climbing your mountain over there and I'm climbing my mountain over here. It's not as if I've reached the top and I'm having a rest. It's just that from where I am on my mountain, I can see obstacles on your mountain that you can't see. So I can point those out to you and maybe show you some alternative routes around them." So I hope you enjoyed that, and I hope you've enjoyed listening. Take care. And just in case you're interested in learning more, the article I referenced on acceptance and commitment therapy was called Embracing Your Demons by Russell Harris. Here's Miley Cyrus's The Climb.